Stop singing. Thanks for the skunk egg. I saw it. I did get it. I couldn't sleep unless I had it back in my life.
Go ahead.
And so this survey is 36 questions, and the authors have broken it down into six components. And the first one is a fact, and this, so these questions are statements, and the students answer them on a scale from 1 to 7. Some are positively worded, some are negatively worded. And so a fact is for questions like, I will like statistics. Cognitive competence is another component, and those look at intellectual knowledge and understanding, and so those are statements such as, I will understand statistical equations. The third component is value, and that looks at the students, how they look at the usefulness and the relevance of statistics in their life. And so those are questions like, I think that I will use statistics in my future job. Another component is difficulty, and that is obviously either the student thinks that stats is either easy or difficult. Interest is their interest in statistics, so statements like I'm interested in learning about statistics, understanding what it means. And then the last component is effort, and that's how much time the student thinks that they will put into the class. And so questions like I plan to study for all my tests. So I have data from Malone, Tisha, and April from I believe 6 or 8 different semesters, and I looked at the means from the 3 to post and the mean differences. And as you can see, the differences for value, interest, and effort have decreased, and we want them to increase because that shows that their attitudes are better after the class. Value is the only difference that is not significant, but the fact that interest significant decrease shows that the student actually lost interest more in statistics than they started with, which isn't good. And so the rest of my capstone was doing an explanatory and a confirmatory factor analysis to see if the survey is actually measuring what the authors think it's measuring, because some of the questions in, for example, cognitive competence seem as if they should be in the factor. So that's
all right, thank you. So you see the cursor up there where? Oh, and I got it back on my screen now. Maybe it's just extended. You can extend a I extended my desktop. Rocket scientist. Well, I did, but I didn't know my. No, I knew that because I said that. But that's where my cursor went, over on my other desktop. I'm back. Next. Huh? You want? I'm supposed to present? Maybe I should do the assignment. Would that be fun or not really? You guys could critique me. Can I wear my skunk hat? Dylan. Did you say you would go?
Sure.
Or somebody, I don't care who. Internship at Train. And just give me the time, make sure the clicker works. Yep. Okay, go, 3:42.
Alright, so this past summer, as many people have known and have heard already, I did internship at Train, so run through real quick about some of the stuff that I covered during that time. Some of the things that we did at Train, I was brought in kind of as a software consultant type of deal. They were trying to determine which software package would be best for their new analytics system that they're trying to build. Specifically, I was looking at R and taking many of the analysis that they had created that some of their engineers use, and seeing if I could create the functions and build them and put them into R. Much of the data that I was looking at is big data. As you can see there, it's about 30,000 plus properties at 15-minute intervals, over 300 different sites. So I was working with a few different teams in their TIS department, which is their intelligence solutions, and also their IT department, who was actually building it and helping me to hook it up to see if I would be able to pull the data straight from the network into R, run the analysis, and then put the results back onto their network. And then at the end of it all, I kind of took some of their subject matter experts, the guys who knew what the numbers actually meant, and train them so that they can try to do some of this stuff themselves in R, build their own functions for stuff that I wasn't able to get to at the time. These are some of the programs that I had experience with during the time. Most of it was with R. Revolution Analytics is an R package built for big data analysis. It doesn't crash like R does when you're doing the 30,000, whatever. And then Tableau, down at the bottom left, is a very good visualization software package that I didn't get a whole lot of experience, but if you can learn how to use it, I've seen people do some pretty amazing visualizations with it. And it's actually been built recently to be able to incorporate R right into it. So you can write your R analytics in Tableau, have it run it, and help with the visualization right in Tableau. Then MicroStrategy is just another quoting software package type deal. And Vertica is an online database that they run for their Amazon Cloud server, where they house a lot of their data. Then here, these next two slides are a couple examples of some of the functions and analytics that I wrote in R for them. These two pages here are all one function built out. So all the different lines are different codes that are being run, and it's all built so that you can just call one function and it does all of this at one time, so that you don't have to type out, you know, however many lines are here every time you want to do the analysis. And this is another one. I believe this first one was for testing what they call their VAS units. It's just some of their heating and cooling units and how they run. And then this one is testing temperature set points to make sure that you're not using too much energy, that the machines aren't running when they shouldn't be, or that the set point isn't varying more often than it should be. And then this was some forecasting stuff that I did, where the blue line and the cone start is where my forecast started, and then where the red line continues in that blue area is the actual data that I was trying to predict. Some of the other things that I learned just beyond the coding stuff were I got to sit in on a lot of pretty big meetings at Train. So I learned that taking notes during the meetings and making sure you're taking good notes so that you can recall them later if you need to is really important. And one of the things that the guy that was my boss liked to emphasize every time is something he called level setting, where you go into a meeting, if you're in a meeting with new people, you start out explaining exactly where you're at, what you expect to be accomplished during the meeting, and kind of going from there. Because if you go into a meeting and start talking about stuff, and someone in the meeting is extremely far behind, you're going to take that whole time catching them up when you should be going forward. So by level setting, you can know what kind of things you can get accomplished in a meeting without wasting too much time. Then obviously time management in a business setting was huge. And that there wasn't, when I was brought in, like they didn't know what the answer should have been during the internship. I was brought in to see what answers I could come up with and then evaluate what was better. So that was that's some of the things I learned in my internship.
All right, good job, man. All right.
How many do we have left?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 left? We kind of cleared this ahead of time, right? So we can knock these out today. Is that okay? That's what our plan was. What I'd really like to do is get them done today if we can. Okay, let's go. Who's next? Philip? Oh, you sent it right to me now?
Yeah.
Philip. Convergence proof. Open. And make sure your clicker works. Okay, bub. Have at it. Okay, next. How are you? Is that for you? I saw yours in this list somewhere. Some linear algebra. Just make sure the clicker works before you start, Christy. Okay, good.
I did a couple of examples of vector space and subspace problems for my linear algebra class. I have a definition here. It's the definition of a subspace, and everything needs to be fulfilled in order for it to be a subspace of a vector space. The zero vector needs to be in W, it needs to be closed under vector addition, and it needs to be closed under scalar multiplication, and then any subspace of a vector space is also a my problem is what W right there is a set of all vectors of that form 2a plus 2b, negative 1, and 2a minus 5b. And then while a and b are real arbitrary numbers, I find a set as a vector that spans W or how it doesn't form a vector space. And in this example, you can see that since there's a negative 1 in the middle position, the zero vector will not be in the set, so therefore it is not going to be a subspace, and therefore it is not a vector space. So I just have to stay in the vector space. And for my next example, I have a definition of the spanning subset. The vectors in the n-dimensional vector space over the real numbers. Instead of all linear combinations of those vectors, it's denoted by span of the vector, and it's called the subset span of T. And to have a collection of all vectors that can be written in the form of like a coefficient times a vector plus a coefficient times a vector. And this problem is it's got the same description of a vowel, but my W set is 2a minus b, 3b minus c, 3c minus a, and 3d. And this is a vector space, so I found the spanning vectors, and I found the linear combinations of all of them. So the first column is a, b, and c, and so those three vectors are the spanning vectors of the space.
Alright, good job.
Okay, we're getting down there.
I saw yours in here somewhere. I don't know how. Presentation for today? No. Remember what time you sent it? Okay, just if we see it, holler. You don't see it, do you? On my screen. Scott, Megan, Christy, Jared, Carson, Jacob. Okay. Ambrose. AMBROSE, right? It's in the junk. I don't have junk. Or it automatically deletes it. Actually, that folder's called Dylan. A couple of hours ago, do you have it on your computer still? Yeah. Can we have somebody other than Tim go? Because I either. Josh, I got Josh left, I got Jarek left, I got Janine left. Ambrose.
I'll go right now.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't see it, Ambrose. Sorry. Yours is up here. Have at her, sir.
We want to continue to come today. I'm going to be testing the system on top of it. I think where it's persistent is just the shortest, and Chronos needs time or delay. And what the persistent problem is it's basically like a block of ice going from point A to point B, and the problem is figuring out the quickest way for that to happen. It's grabbing. And Johan Bernoulli is one of the most of the problem to some of his friends there in Newton, Jake Bernoulli, Leibniz, and Bobital in June of 1696. Although he was not the first one to work on the problem, Galileo did in 1638. And the problem he proposed to his colleagues was that given two points A and B in a vertical plane, what is the curve traced out by a point acted only at by gravity, which starts at A and reaches B in the shortest time? Newton had received the problem at 4 p.m. to work on it until he finished it before 4 a.m. the next day, only spent maybe 12 hours on the problem. And Jacob Bernoulli, who was Johann's brother, attempted to outdo him and created a harder version of the problem, which then became later, which is known today as calculus variations. And that's just, I didn't really get much on the other two guys. So Bernoulli showed that the solution to be one cycle of an upside-down cycloid, and it found the slope of the curve by using calculus and optimal control. And optimal control is a mathematical optimization method for dealing with dynamical systems, assuming pendulum of ball on down curve, etc. And
see if it works.
Basically just showing the cycloid upside down cycloid. And to solve the problem is actually it's just one segment of the cycloid. And you can see how the quickest way is actually go up, go down, and then back up is actually the quickest way to solve it. That's it.
Okay. Tim, you want to go back up now?
Or...
Sorry, man. That's the right attitude, though. Oh, I'm still looking for my mouse. That's so funny. I don't know why it's funny, but... Sure, I must have deleted it. Infinite Zones. Just wait for it, and then just click it once to make sure it's going to work for you. Okay. There you go. Good job. Have at it. Okay, listen up.
Jim deserves your attention just like the first one.
All right, let's go.
Most of you are in advanced class, you'll probably recognize this, but doing this talk on Infinite Zones. This problem first came up back in ancient Greece. Back called Zeno, they come up with different paradoxes. The most famous one is involving walking a certain distance. Let's say you're walking from, I don't know, intro to math staff to research methods. And so you have to go through this all out here. At some point during your walk, you'll get halfway in between that classroom and this. But now you still have a finite distance left to go, so you can kind of reach the halfway point before you can get there. And so on and so forth, and just get halfway each time. Do this an infinite number of times, but this is, even though you have an infinite sum, it doesn't take you an infinite amount of time to walk here. We're all here, so there must be a finite answer. So the question is, what if we have a sequence where each term is smaller than last? Is that enough to make the series converge? Take a look at the harmonic series. that's clearly it's not like determined. It goes here. It's 1/1 plus 1/2. It's 1/3. So on. But it turns out that this is a little hard to work with, so we're just going to group some terms together and make them smaller. So each term, we will lower it to the next power of 2. Like 1/3 will become 1/4, 1/5, 1/6, and so we'll all become 1/8. And so this series is smaller because fractions are all equal or smaller to the terms of the original sequence. But then, if we kind of add them all up into that, right, that has the same base. We get 1 plus 1/2, 1/2, 1/2, infinitely many times, so that equals infinity. So clearly, it's not enough just to have it have the terms go to 0 and get smaller each time. So let's go back to the Zeno's paradox with the 1 plus 1/2. Take a look at the partial sums of the sequence. So the first partial sum is 1, and then 1.5. 1.75, 0.875. So there's a bit of pattern here. Each time, in order to get the partial sum, you just take 2 and subtract whatever number you left that on. So for say the second one, for instance, you just subtract 1/2. That's the partial sum. We can write this out this way as 2 minus 1/2 to the I. Now, this is a lot nicer than series because we have a lot of things we can do with sequences. For instance, we can take the limit and say go to infinity. You know, just evaluate this sequence as I go to infinity. We find that it just equals 2, just a finite number. In conclusion, in order to have an infinite sum go to a finite number, we don't. We need to not just go to 0, each of the terms being smaller than last, we also made it to go to 0 back then. Any questions?
Yep, sir. Got two left. I believe. You want me to pick for you?
I'll go
after
that.
Okay.
That would be
bad. Right here, and I saw this in the list. There you go, sir. Number theory? Just click it and make sure it works. Good. And you can go.
Alright. Well, mine's going to be a shorter one, but mine's dealing with number theory specifically. It's dealing with quadratic residues. It's familiar with that, but I'm just doing a small example, which is use the quadratic law of reciprocity to compute the following Legendre symbol, which is 85 over 101, which would be like, which this would be equivalent to x squared equals 85 mod 101. It's basically with the Legendre symbol. If it's 1, it's a quadratic residue. If it's -1, it's a non-quadratic residue. So it would be like a complex number. But the law of quadratic reciprocity, these rules, like if you let p or q be distinct primes, if it's -1 over p, it'd be 1 if p is equal to 1 mod 4, and then -1 if p is equal to 3 mod 4, that is actually. And then if for 2 over p, it's 1 if p is equal to 1 or 7 mod 8, and -1 if p is equal to 3 or 5 mod 8. And then q and p, you can flip it to p over q if p for q is equal to 1 mod 4, or -p over q if p is equal to q, which is also equal to 3 mod 4. So they have to be, they have to both be 3 mod 4 in order for it to be flipped to a negative constant. And to solve the problem of 85 over 101, you want to factor it out to two distinct primes, would be 17 and 5 over 101. And then you want to flip it with the third part that we just mentioned. It says 101 the both the denominators are 1 log 4. 4 times 5 is 20. Or 4 times 20 is 100, and there's 1 additional extra to the proficient module for good numbers to take. So you take those and reduce them for 17, mod 17 and mod 5. And for mod 17, it's going to be 16 over 17, because 17 times 5 is 85, and then you do it again, it's 1 over 2, it's 16 over 17. But you can factor that to 2 to 4. And the other one would just be 1 mod 5 is 5 times 20, which would be 100, and there's 1 left over. So it would just be 1 over 5, which is equal to 1, because the denominator is 1 mod 4. And then 2 over 17, since the denominator, the part 2 of the law, which is like p or is equal to 1 over 7, is 1. So it would be actually 1 to the 4th power, which is still 1. And you times that by 1, and you still get 1. So the implications of this is that the geometric symbol of this, of 85 over 101, is 1, which implies that 85 is the quadratic residue of 101, and x squared equals 85 mod 11, mod 101 as a solution. And any questions? I thought it was interesting. I have no idea how I did.
All right. You.
Okay.
Not quite. Oh. Too many emails. It's in here, I saw it. There we go. Stats 480. Okay, just maybe click it to make sure it's going to work. Oops. Just wait. It'll be okay. There we go. So click it one more time. Not move. Oh, it is moving. Okay, just wait. Okay, it's working now or no? Okay, just wait. Don't know what's going on here. Animation. Okay. Yeah, just should work with animation, so you don't have to remove them, Jeannie. Let's see if we can get it to work. It's working though. Yeah, it should be okay. No, yeah, this will go forward. Just wait. Is that how you wanted it? Maybe one more. There you go. Okay. 411. Okay, go.
Thank you.
Good job.
Okay, good job, everybody. Thanks for staying after Wednesday. We'll just work on next week's.
We'll do this again Monday of next week. Huh?
You can be a new topic. I think the one that I want to, I think we want to do, I'll explain it for sure. I'll have to think about it. But the next one might be, no, I will randomly pull out one of your slides, I think. I think I'll switch the order up. I got to think about the picture. Or did you already do the picture one or what?
No.
Picture one's going to be hard, so I got to make sure I want to do that.
On Wednesday, we'll just work.
Okay. What I'm going to probably do is, I mentioned this, I think maybe in class last time, is